Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today, we're going to be learning the 10th Perek, Perek Yud of Divrei Yomim Aleph. Now, we're going to actually see a very different cadence to what we've been looking at in the first 9 Prokem. Up till now, it's been the genealogy. So we've had the 9 Prokem of Yichusin, of the genealogy of Israel, till the times of Ezra. Now we turn back to the same type of cadence that we've had in Sefer Shmuel, and in Sefer Melachim. So it's back to the stories, the narratives, and trying to understand. And what we're going to do is we're going to do the same way that we've learned there, is that we're going to do a very basic overview together and a few points to ponder. Here's the overview. This is a perek which is short. It's only 14 psukim. It starts off in the setting of battle. The Philistines are fighting against Israel. It's the time of the end of the Malchus of Shaul, and Israel are being chased by the Philistines. They arrive at the Har Gilboa, Mount Gilboa, upon which there are many losses on the Israelite side. At this point in time, Shaul and his children are in a compromised state, and Yonatan, Avinadav, and Malkishua, the children of Shaul, are killed. The Shaul realizes that the end is imminent. The archers are busy targeting the area that he's in, and he turns to his arms carrier, his Nosei Kelov, and he says, pull out your sword and kill me so that these Arelim, these uncircumcised Philistines, should not play with me and torture me. But the arms bearer was not willing to take this task, and he was very scared. So Shaul takes his own sword, and he falls upon his sword, upon which the arms bearer sees that he's dead, and falls upon his own sword as well. At this point in time, Shaul, the king, is dead. His children are dead, and all of the Israel who see this happens, they realize the king is dead, and they flee from the Philistines. The next morning, the Philistines are busy going through all the corpses, trying to take all the money and the loot they can from this battle scene, and they find Shaul and his children that are on Mount Gilboa, and they strip them and of all of their adornments. And they take all his adornments as the king, and they bring his head. They remove his head and bring it into the house of Beis Dagon. Dagon is one of their gods. It's a fish god, because remember the Philistines are a seafaring people. They bring his head and adornments to that shrine. And the people of Yavesh Gilad see and hear what's happened. Yavesh Gilad is a Jewish city on the Transjordan. They hear about this, and they send overnight their people who go and recover the bodies and of Shaul and his children, and they bury them under the Eilah in Yavesh, under this tree in Yavesh, and they fast for 7 days. Why did Shaul die? The Tanakh concludes because the fact that he rebelled against God, and he did not wait for he didn't listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when it came to the Amalekim, and he also asked of a person who brought up the dead to bring up Shaul, and he didn't search out God. Therefore, Vayasev es hamelucha leDavid ben Yishai, and the melucha, the kingship, went to David. That's the end of the perek. A number of points to ponder. First of all, where is Mount Gilboa? Just worthwhile noting, in terms of the geography, Mount Gilboa actually is it's towards the east side of Israel. It's just below the area of the Kinneret Sea, towards the Jordan River, which should already tell us that this is a very impressive military array that the Philistines have succeeded in. This is past the valley of Jezreel, of Megiddo, where in the area towards really the east side of Israel, the Philistines dwell in the plains, the coastal plains. If they're this far east, it means that the battle is going very badly for Israel, just to appreciate that. Usually the Israelites have the hill territory and the Philistines have the coastal plains, and they're now deep into the mountains. The question then becomes is, who really killed Shaul? So although it seems in our perek that Shaul committed suicide, that is not necessarily the accounting that we have. If you open up Sefer Shmuel Beis, perek Aleph, Psukim Vav to Yud, you will see that in fact a Nar, or who is a Ger Amaleki, a convert, Amalekite, very big discussion as to who this person could have been, comes in front of David HaMelech, and he describes that he was on Mount Gilboa that day, and he comes across Shaul, who is on his sword, leaning on his sword, but is not yet dead. And he asks and he beseeches this young man to kill him, which he does. And he kills Shaul HaMelech. The Malbim explains that Shaul had tried to kill himself. Shanaase Gosses, he was on the point of death. And this Amaleki, this young man, whoever he is, very interesting discussion as to who he is, ultimately finishes him off. And David HaMelech, therefore, actually kills this person for essentially finishing the job of killing the king. So just a little more complex than is presented here in Divrei HaYamim. Big question which is asked is, was Shaul HaMelech allowed to commit suicide? Let's just back up for a moment. Is a person allowed to commit suicide? And the answer is absolutely not. The Torah is explicit in Parshas Noach, where it says, "Ach estimchem lenafshoseichem edrosh. I will search out your blood from your soul. Miad kol chay adroshenu, miad adam, miad ish ba'achiv edrosh es nefesh adam. You are responsible to preserve the life of all human beings, including yourself." What is interesting is the Das Zakenim quotes a Midrash Rabbah, which quotes two opinions. The word says va'ach and but, which means usually when you have the word ach, it is an exclusion of something. So the first opinion in the Midrash says it excludes the issue of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, who threw themselves into the furnace at the times of Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel, and Shaul HaMelech. Because if a person is concerned that they'll be tortured to an extreme extent, they are allowed to commit suicide, allow themselves to hand themselves over to death. So it sounds like, according to this version of the Midrash, that he was allowed to be doing this. The second opinion actually says no, it comes to include. Actually, Shaul HaMelech was included. You're not allowed to commit suicide even upon the fear of torture. And therefore, the second opinion in the Midrash says that Shaul HaMelech did Shaloi Kadas Chachamim. He went against tradition. He was incorrect in doing so. The Das Zakenim does go on to conclude that during the times of Shmad, which means the times of decree, and no doubt he is referring the Das Zakenim of Balei HaTosfos in France are clearly referring to the Crusades. He describes how there were a number of people who would kill children, shecht children, in order to prevent them from being reached by the Crusaders, whether for fear of conversion to Christianity or just fear of being killed in a terrible way. We know famously, it's recorded in many records, in York, the Jews committed suicide when they were under siege from the frenzied mob outside. There were many, many times where people did take their lives, and it was based on this discussion over here surrounding the death of Shaul HaMelech. It's interesting that both of these opinions of the Medrash are brought in the Bedek Habayis. So, oh, by the way, the Das Zakenim does describe there was a certain Rav who was actually putting to death many Jewish children because he felt not to put them at the hands of these terrible, terrible crusaders. And at which point, another Rav would shouted at him and called him a murderer, because these are the two different opinions as to whether Shaul was correct or incorrect in this. Both of these opinions are brought in the Bedek HaBayis, which is Rav Yosef Karo's additions to his commentary called the Beis Yosef on the Tur. And there are a number of mitigating factors which might make the case of Shaul HaMelech an anomaly, unusual, which are the following. The Yam Shel Shlomo, Baba Kama Siman Nuntes, tells us that there are four mitigating factors which could possibly make his case unique. Number one, he's concerned about the torture because they would force him to serve their gods as part of their victory. Number two, he's concerned about the number of Israelites who might put themselves in harm's way to save him and lose their lives in the course of that, which we see is true because the people fled after he died. The third thing he mentions is that he was worried that they would create a great Chilul Hashem by publicly torturing him and disgracing the Mashiach Hashem. In other words, it wasn't just about him as an individual, it was him as a figurehead. And number four, he also had a nevuah from Shmuel HaNavi that he was going to die the next day. So he knew that the end was nigh at this point in time. Another external factor to consider is the Mari Kra, one of the commentators of the Rishonim on Tanakh, said that perhaps he'd already been hit by the snipers. Perhaps he was already hit by an arrow and was in the process of dying, although it's still murder to kill such a person, but he knew that this essentially was the end. La Locha and the Shulchan Aruch in Yerodea, we know that it tells us in Shin Mem Hei Gimel that unfortunately a person who puts himself to him or herself to death, a person who commits suicide, ledas, meaning to say knowingly, which is a very hard category to actually explicitly reach, that person loses certain privileges of burial and shiva, certain things, terrifying things. But the Shulchan Aruch says, if a person is gadol ha'mavada atzmo ledas, who anus kashal ha'melech, a person who is in a circumstance where they had no alternatives, ein moni mimenu kol davar, the Shulchan Aruch says they do not lose some of the privileges in this case because of anus. Very, very complex and very difficult topic, but this is all learnt out of this topic here. What actually happened to Shaul's body? We hear about what happens to his head. So if you pair this up with Shmuel Aleph Perek Lamed Aleph, you hear that they took his body and hanged it upon the ramparts of Beit Shan. So the Malbim explains the body being hanged on Beit Shan was for the populace, the Philistine populace, to see the success. But the reason why his head went to the shrine of Dagon was because Dagon was that shrine which was destroyed. That was the god that kept collapsing in front of the Aron when the Aron was taken at the times of Eli to the the Beis Dagon. So they wanted to, so to speak, show that the head of the Israelite Messiah was in the shrine almost as revenge for what had happened to him beforehand. Why was it that Anshei Yavesh Gilad were the only people who went and recovered the body of Shaul? Very fascinating. You know that Yavesh Gilad was not in Israel central. It was on the east bank of the Jordan. It was in the tribe of Manasseh, all the way out there in the east. Why was it them who went to recover down, all the way down to the south, to the southwest, to recover the body? So turn the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer says because they owed a debt of gratitude. If you remember the very beginning of Shaul's Malchus, the actual episode which allowed him to show and demonstrate his powers as king was when the Yavesh Gilad was surrounded by Nachash, who was the king of Ammon. He gave them a seven-day period in which they could either submit themselves as slaves by cutting out their eye and paying taxes or be killed. And they went to Shaul HaMelech, and Shaul HaMelech defended Yavesh Gilad, and that this was the hallmark moment of him being recognized as a king. So now they come back to show their appreciation and to give his body a full burial. However, I think it goes back even further than that. At the times of Pelegish Begiva, when there was a civil war to wipe out the tribe of Binyamin, there was only one city which did not send troops to fight against Binyamin, and that was Yavesh Gilad, coming from the tribe of Manasseh. They're essentially the brother, Binyamin and Yosef. The tribe of Manasseh was not willing to send their people. Because of that, Israel had a cherem, a decree against those who did not send troops, and they went and wiped out Yavesh Gilad, and in fact married the woman of Yavesh Gilad to the tribe of Binyamin because they were not under the ban to marry into the tribe of Binyamin, which means to say Yavesh Gilad and Binyamin were merged essentially at the beginning. And I think that's where this comes from, is that in a certain sense, Manasseh and Binyamin were in a certain sense converged at this point in time. Why the 7 days did they fast? So the Radak says, because those are the 7 days that Nachash gave them respite that the Shaul HaMelech was able to help. And this could also just perhaps be a precursor to a notion of what's called Likud Atzamos. There's a notion of removing a body, and there is an element of Avelus, which is extant from moving bones. Just fascinating Lahalacha as well. And finally, to close, what sins was Shaul being held accountable for? What's being described over here in the end of the Perek seemed to be the exact curse given to him the day beforehand in Shmuel Aleph Perek Chof Ches, where he went to pull up the dead Shmuel from an oracle, and Shmuel said to him, because you did not listen to me and you did not kill the Amalekim as you were supposed to, the kingship has been torn from you, you're going to die tomorrow. It seems a similar representation over here. It seems to me that that's the same theme that's being described, and that is that Shaul HaMelech's, so to speak, dependence on others and not being strong enough to do what is necessary in the right situation. So when it came to Amalek, he was listening to the people rather than listening to the decree of God. When it came to finding somebody to help, he didn't turn to God. Well, he couldn't find HaKadosh Baruch Hu because there was no Nevi'im or Urim U'Tumim speaking to him. So he went to the dead. He went to Shmuel HaNavi, even after his death, showing a sense of dependence rather than independence, which is being described over here. Finally, what's the point of this parak? Why are we being told this parak here? This is a very, very short sliver of the life of Shaul. The Da'at Mikra of Yudakil points out, it's pretty obvious that this is taking us to Malchus Beis David. The main point is this is a transition from the Malchus Shaul, which was very short-lived, to the Malchus Beis David. But it should be noted that it does not describe one interesting fact, and that is that Shaul HaMelech was the father-in-law of David, married to Michal. It seems that it does not want to mention, Tanakh does not mention that, but it does hint to that in the sense that the Malchus did go to David ben Yishai, almost suggesting that there was this continual flow. It also should be noted that although this is a very negative perek, we hear a lot of negative things, it's not only negative things that we hear about Shaul HaMelech. Early on in Dira Yamim in Perek Hey, Pasuk Yud, we hear about the fact that during the times of Shaul, they expanded the territory on the east bank of the Jordan, so that's expansion of Israel. And in Dera Yom Perek Chav Vav, Psukim Chav Zayin to Chav Ches, we hear about how Shaul HaMelech was able to invest in the many aspects of the holiness. He was called Hahikdish Shmuel HaRoev Shaul Ben Kish Avnei Ben Ner V'Yoav Ben Saruya Kol HaMakdish Al Yad Shlomiz V'Yachav, that there was a lot dedicated towards the future Mikdash at the hands of Shaul. So it's not all negative, it's also that the more holistic perspective. This leads us now to Malchus Beis David, which is really the primary focus of the rest of the book of Dera. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.